Life's good.
Never on.
Whoa.
Hard. Hard reset.
Come on, Brent.
Life's good.
Got real close.
The hair high, right?
Trying to hit two thirds.
Have they saved it for her? Yes, they have.
Welcome to Game of Stones, everybody. I am Sean Graham Scott alongside, as always. Hello, Scott.
Sean, good afternoon. I don't feel we speak that much in the afternoons.
Nope.
But it's great to be here. Your house looks like it's middle of the night.
Well, I don't have the overhead light on, and it's very overcast and cloudy today. So I'm not getting the natural light from the window that's right in front of me. So it... looks a little dark, but you know, that's how it normally looks when we record in the winter. And actually, maybe a nice little segue weather-wise for our guest, who is coming
right
from across the pond from the Rocks Across the Pond podcast, the Professor of Peel, joining us from Glasgow, Jonathan Havercroft. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, how are you guys doing?
Doing well. Is it overcast? And it's dark there now, obviously, because it's night.
Dark. It was sunny today. It's been miserable all week. It was sunny today, and I didn't leave the house, which was like a foul in Glasgow behavior. But yeah.
Yeah. So you're here. We're doing our annual European Championship preview. No bet this year. Ryan couldn't join us, and you are not going to make picks because even though you have, in the curling parlance, taken a step back from the competitive side of the sport, you are still going to be at the Eurobees.
Yeah, my step back hasn't really happened. They keep pulling me back in. So I was actually playing in Prague last weekend, and yeah, I'm going to be on the bench in Lahti, not Loja, so a different part of Finland.
There you go. Yeah. So what's good in Lahti? Like what are we? What should we go see? What's the tourism report?
It looks like a lot like Loja, except a different part of Finland, as near as I can tell from the Wikipedia page. It's a small village, sports resort. They have a ski jump, which I'm excited to look at, but I don't think I'll do because I'm afraid of killing myself. But yeah.
Okay. All right. That's that sounds like a lovely way to spend a week.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. So as we usually do, we will go through each of the teams in the A division. Then we'll talk about the B division in a more broad sense of the event. And of course, Jonathan will be there, knows a lot of the teams, both in the A and the B side. So it can bring us some good insight there from overseas. But before we get into the specific teams, we're talking about this a little bit before we started to record. And Jonathan, I listened to your episode with Ryan this morning that you guys recorded in September about the format change. This is the last European Championship in this format, 10 teams, round robin. Moving forward, it's going to be in pool play. Scottish Curling has announced that the winner of the Scottish Championship will represent Scotland at the European Championship moving forward. And when I read that, I thought of a line from Superstore where Garrett says, "It takes a lot of courage to make such a minor gesture this late in the game." But okay. But the format that you guys talked about has been officialized. The episode that you guys did, that was before it was officialized. Yeah. Now it has been officialized. So as it relates specifically to the European Championship, now that it's in place, everyone knows about it. What are you hearing and what is your sense of the European Championship, given that this is going to be the last one under this ABC format and 10-team round robin?
So actually, yeah, it'll be only 10 teams at the Euros going forward. There'll be no more European B. I think people don't know yet, because I think there's still a lot of details to be fleshed out, but I think it could either go the way of a more social event if World Curling just lets countries, if Scotland and other countries just let people who win their championships go, or winners of some kind of qualification tournament go, and there's not a big prize on it. I've also heard that maybe World Curling wants to make it a feature event and put some prize money and make it a Euro Slam. So I imagine if there's points and a big pot of money, the top teams would go. I imagine if there's not a big pot of money, it might become a bit more of a return to kind of old school, bit more sociable event. Perhaps not the top teams, but winners from major curling countries getting together. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, I think we've talked a lot that I don't think Niklas Edin has ever won the Swedish curling championship. So if like Sweden says you got to win it,
yeah,
I mean, it's either a way to get him to come back and play in it, or he just punts on it, right?
Like he made his punt, and that's not like there's other good Swedish teams. Like they just right. don't like the current format for European curling. Lots of second and third ranked teams in countries just don't get any exposure because there's no path for them to play in international events.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it with the slams. Like, there's three Swiss women's teams in the slams now, like three Korean women's teams. You tend to make a couple Japanese women's teams. Like, the slams is really where it's happening now for the not top teams.
Yeah, well, even like in Scotland, like Cammy Bryce could never be selected because he's not in the program, but he's qualified for slams through cash feeling, and he's a good team, I think. So maybe a team like that goes to the Euros, right?
Yeah, you get the chance to compete, then all bets are off, right? Like, it's nice that we'll have the chance to see some other teams, like some up and coming teams, rather than just the same over and over again.
Yeah.
But we do lose a premier event on the calendar.
Possibly. I think it's up in the air what happens. So we're just going to have to see how that part of it
develops. But even if they keep showing up, like slamifying it is not that interesting to me. Like, I like the round robin. I like when events take the week and you got to play everybody. And like, the attrition of it, I think, is part of the fun. Of watching it, you know, not if you're maybe not if you're playing, like you played last year. I don't know
what's the verb. I'm not being attrited, attrited. It's a slow death. It was a very slow death last year. Anyway,
So let's get into the fields. 10 teams, men's, women. We'll start with the men's side. As I want to do, I have put these teams in a sort of power ranking of how I would stack up the field going into it. So let's start. As I say, with the men, top eight in the field will make it to the World Championship this year. We'll start with Scotland, Bruce Mowat's team. They were the silver medalist last year, but did finish first in the round robin, going 8-1. They are the top team on the world curling rankings. They have a 93-point lead on Matt Dunstone right now, who's the second-ranked team. Team Schwaller's in third, and they're 140 points ahead of Schwaller on the rankings. It is an absolute rout right now in world curling rankings as it sits. So far this season, they've won the Tour Challenge. They're coming off the win at the Tahoe Slam. 14-1 combined in those two events. They have a 57% hammer efficiency on the year, and they scare me with how good that they are currently playing. I don't know. Do either of you have any comments to add on just how good they are? Jonathan, when you're playing against them, as you did last year, did you think you had a chance?
I mean, so I was on the bench. We put Colin in, who's Bruce's brother, for that game. Our first end was like perfect. And like, actually the fifth from the other team, Kyle Waddle, came over and talked to our coach the next day and said, you guys played you paid 100% first end. And Rambo and I were sitting next to each other, and Bruce made a shot. Like, it was kind of a weird back weight spinner shot to pick us up and pick up two. And like, I think everyone was like, where did that shot come from? And then I said, you know, I talked to Bruce after the game. He's like, yeah, it was tricky, but it was there. Like, he was nonchalant. So he's just a different level right now, I think. The separation between him and everyone else is significant at the moment.
Yeah, I think, Sean, the way that you stratify the teams here, I sort of think there's top four, but really this is the top one. This is like Rachel Holman on the women's side. You'd be silly to sort of bet against them. The way they're playing right now.
Yeah, I agree. So definitely the favorites going into this event. As you say, I think the next few teams, I actually had a hard time figuring out who I would put at number two in the rankings here. And I put Sweden. I put Niklas Edin here in my second slot. They went 6-3 last year, finished fifth place, missed the playoffs. If you remember last year, was it five teams finished at 6-3? It was a bit of a cluster there in the middle. So they missed the playoffs on the head-to-head. Kind of strange that so many teams had the same record and none of the tiebreakers came down to draw shot challenge. They'd all beat each other enough that it was all head-to-head. Of the teams that were 6-3, they did have the lowest shooting percentage of all of them at 82.6% and the worst draw shot challenge at 36.65 centimeters. So far this season, they've reached the quarterfinal of the Tour Challenge. They missed the playoffs at the other two slams, 7-7 in those events overall. I don't know, Scott, do you think this is the last gasp for Nicholas Sedin at the Euros? And we'll talk about it obviously with the Olympics and if they decide to play in the Worlds, but they haven't sustained this quad the way that they did the previous quad. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're not, sort of at the top form that we're used to seeing them play at. And yeah, it could be the last one for Nicholas, right? What more does he have to do, really? I don't think he's got anything left to prove. So it might be the time when, maybe Oscar steps up to skip his own team and Nick retires. But, they're not playing super well this year. So I'm taking a lot of stats from doubletakeout.com, the KenPom site, and they're the 10th team in the world per those rankings. And against the rest of the top 10 this year, only 2-10, which is pretty striking. Right. You know, obviously they're playing those teams a lot. They're in the position to be at those events with the teams, but to only have two wins is a little surprising. So not playing their best, but again, they can always, if they do, they're going to win a lot of games.
Jonathan, what's your take on Nicholas Sedin at this point in his career and heading into the Olympics?
Well, I wouldn't count him out. Like if anyone can flip the switch for a big event, it's Nicodine. And there's, I can recall some times early in our podcast where I kind of wrote him off as done. And then he went on, went on a bit of a tear. So I'm not going to do that again, but he's probably, I think him and Retornaz are probably the two oldest skips in the field. So, I'm not sure if they have another, he could probably go another quad, but he may not want to kind of thing. I think it's kind of up to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and the injuries that we've seen too, eventually you just stop wanting to do that rehab and get in the gym as much and like all that. At some point, you're just done with it.
Yeah.
All right. You mentioned Joel Retornaz. That is who I have next, the Italian side. They were also 6-3 last year, finished in sixth place on the head-to-heads. They did beat Scotland. They were the only team to beat Bruce Mout in the field last year, but did lose to a bunch of the other teams at 6-3, the Norwegians, the Swiss, and the Swedes. So far this season, they won the KW Fall Classic, quarterfinal, semifinal, tiebreakers at the Slams, 2-3 in Tahoe, if you include the tiebreaker game. They lost that to Mike McEwen. They do score lots of points and give up lots of points, so they're exciting to watch. But Jonathan, again, this is another team that a couple years ago, they went on this great run and they were doing well, and it's kind of cooled off for them a little bit. Of course, they're the host team coming up in the Olympics. So how important do you think the Euros are to them as we go through the rest of the season?
I actually think all those teams take it seriously. I think it's like a big event. I think for Joel, I think he hasn't yet had, he's been like kind of in the top 10, even top five, had a number one ranking for a bit, but he's still waiting for, I think, a big breakthrough win, like a world championship, a Euros or an Olympic. And I think if he has a shot, he's definitely going to want to capitalize on it. So,
Yeah, and this is their premier tune-up event for the Olympics that they're hosting. You know, sort of the whole last 8 years of this team has been building towards 2026, putting the pieces in the right spot. So given that this is their last tune-up, I'd expect them to be sharp. Mm-hmm. But understanding that they're not planning to peak here this week. Their goal is to peak in February. And so, if we see a 6-3, I think it's fine. If we see a 1-8, 1-9, or 1-8, I'd be worried.
Yeah, that would be a problem. If they get relegated, yeah, we got Yeah. But we got issues. So get relegated to nothing, though. If you finish in the bottom two, this shit doesn't really matter. But that would be surprising for sure. Let's move on to, I have the Germans next. Mark Miskatowicz, Benjamin Kapp, Felix Menzenthal, Johannes Schürrle. They were also 6-3 last year. They beat the Norwegians and... I don't know what I wrote there. Anyway.
Beat us.
What was interesting in terms of the stats last year, Benjamin Kapp was the number one third in the field at 86.1%. So if you can have that, and Mark, if he increases his percentage relative to the field a little bit, they're in pretty good shape. If you can do well at those back end positions, it's not really a hot take, then you're going to win a lot of games. So far on the season, they got into a tiebreaker at the Tour Challenge. They missed the playoffs at the other two slams. What I found kind of interesting here, Scott, is that 33 ends, they scored in 33 ends last year. They gave away points. The other team scored in 36 ends, but they had 66 points and gave up 51. So they were scoring 2 points an end when they scored and only giving up a little less than 1.5 per points the other way. So even though the other team scored more points than that or more ends than them, they were doing a better job of converting. I should also note that they were, other than Team England, the only team, well, those were the only two teams to have more blank ends than stolen ends over the course of the week. So you're in good company there, Jonathan. But in thinking about this, Scott, the question I have, because they had that good run in 2023, is this Maddalena DuPont?
Yeah.
In terms of last year, you mean? In terms of winning last year?
Sorry, yes. By winning last year, is this a Maddalena DuPont situation?
Where we never take them seriously correct. Again as contenders. I mean, maybe that's just me. could be. Yeah, it could be. One of these teams that, you know, just sort of jumped up, caught lightning in a bottle, had their moment. And, you know, the rest of the time they're going to be fairly good. Might contend for the playoffs, might not. Looking at their record this year, Sean, they're below 500 on the year. So... and they're not playing, they're like beating the teams that they should beat, but are not very successful against the top 25 teams. So I think only five wins in total against the top 25 out of 22 games. So I'm surprised that you have them listed here, Sean.
Well, they are the defending champions,
I guess.
So that is due some respect.
Some respect.
That's what I mean. It's Maddalena DuPont.
You're right. I think it is 100%.
Jonathan, how surprised were you last year that they won?
I'll say this. Of all the teams we played, I thought they were the best technical throwers up close. And I'll also say that if you can go look on Instagram, that Benny Kapp hit a 25 foot angle run back the other week, like, and it's like not a fluke. Like, he's being the top shooter is not a fluke, and he's like 23-24. So I don't think they're a Maddalena DuPont. I think they're like they're probably not a team for this Olympics, but in 4 years time I think they'd be like a medal in the medal conversation, if that makes sense. I think they kind of position themselves with that win for more funding from the German Federation. They're kind of doing the right things, but you do have to get to that top 10, you've probably just got to go out and spiel for like 3-4 years and get the experience against the best team. So they're at that stage. You know, they played a really good game against Bruce in the final. It wasn't like, I'd say they fluked it. They earned that win for sure, but I wouldn't put them. I put them like fourth or fifth heading in, basically, if I was to handicap the field.
Yeah. All right, so next up for me, I have the Swiss side, Team Schwaller. They went 6-3 last year. They did lose 10-8 to the Scottish team, 7-4 to the Norwegians. This season, a quarterfinal, semifinals at the Slams. They did win a couple events in August, but it's August, so I don't really count it that much. Similar to what we talked about with the Germans, they scored in 36 ends. They gave up points in 34 ends, but they were a plus 13 overall in the point differential. So again, doing a pretty good job of minimizing the damage when the other team is scoring and capitalizing when they have the hammer. The thing I think I'm the lowest on this team out of like anyone who podcasts about curling, but like you talked about it with Returnez, Jonathan, that he needs a signature win. I think these guys need a signature win, maybe more than Returnez does.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they're always there. I actually think they're probably a little, like if you compare, like the big difference in my mind is they're a bit too defensive compared to say, like Bruce will just throw a gajillion rocks in play and he's fine with the angles. He's happy taking risks. I think the Swiss are a bit more conservative and by the book in how they play the game. And I think sometimes that bites you in big competitions that,
right,
get a bit tight, play a bit defensive, let a team hang around, maybe don't take the risk you need to take in order to crack the big end. So I think that's kind of in their Achilles heel in big events.
That makes a lot of sense. And we talked about that for Rachel Holman sort of before the last couple of years, where you're like, you're better than these teams, like just go and be better. And I think for the Swiss team, that makes a lot of sense that you say, hey, just go and like be good at curling because you are. But you're right, they do play a little more defensive style, and that matters when then you get into a close game and there's more pressure on the line and you do have to make those shots, those trickier shots that you haven't, you know, become accustomed to making over and over again, like Team Mowat. So good observation there. I do think this team, you know, is meddling again. I don't know what that would mean for them, right? They seem to meddle at the Worlds all the time. Yeah. But getting to the top of the podium, yeah, Sean, that would be their signature win.
Yeah, and I think it would make at least me take them more seriously when we get to February.
Fair.
So let's then move on to the Norwegian side. Magnus Ramsfeld and his team with Martin Sesekker, Bendik Ramsfeld, and Gaut Nepstad. They went, believe it or not, 6-3 last year in this event. They did, the thing that really hurt them was a loss to the Dutch side, and Woudermania caught up to Team Ramsfeld last year, which hurt them when getting into that tiebreak mumbo jumbo. They did have the lowest points per end of all the top teams in the field last year. So they're going to have to increase that again, just to get them over the edge there. This year on the season quarterfinal in the Masters, quarterfinal at the Swiss Cup in Basel, only a 31% hammer efficiency, though, scoring 1.3 points per end when they do have the hammer. Those are not numbers that are going to do well in this particular field. But as we look at the Norwegian team, Jonathan, what's your take on them as a team that these guys have been around a little bit? We've seen them a bunch. Are they continuing to improve, or have they kind of plateaued a bit?
I don't know if they've plateaued. I think, how old's Magnus? He can't be that old. Like he's got to be like late 20s, maybe like 27, 28. I don't know. I'm guessing. I know he's got receding hairline, but I think he's.
I think he's fairly young. Who doesn't? Actually. I mean,
exactly. On. Who doesn't? Could be. He's 23. Yeah.
He's 28.
28. I think they're still fairly young. I think they're good. I think there's a big gap between the top four, maybe Germany knocking on the door, and then Norway just in the field. But I also think there's a pretty big gap between Norway and the lower four in the field, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. I broke them down into into these three different brackets. And yeah, I've got Mauit, Schwalder, Returnez, and Nadine at the top, Moskatowicz, Ramsfell, Klima in the middle, and then Denmark, Poland, and Austria sort of for the bottom three.
Yeah.
And I do think there's like pretty big gaps between those groups.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, at 28 is a skip. I think you're maybe just hitting your prime, maybe.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, it'd be your 30s. But so I think they'll be around for a while, you know. And they're definitely kind of knocking the door. They're not quite qualifying. Haven't they qualified for slams this year? Or
They played in the Masters. Yeah.
So they played in the Masters. Yeah. So they're kind of, they've always been like slam kind of bubble team, right? So, and not, yeah. Yeah. So I think they're good, but yeah, there's like that gap between that and like the teams that are always in the slams and always in the playoffs at the slams. So,
yeah.
All right, let's move on to the Austrians. I have them up next, Matthias Genner and his team. I would just encourage everybody, pause this right now for a second. Go to the World Curling website. Look at Jonas Backefin's photo. He looks like either he just robbed a bank or like took a poop in somebody's car and is so proud of himself for doing something awful. Like the look on his face is really quite remarkable in that photo. And he's kind of angled away from the camera, but his face is turned directly into it. It's a remarkable photo. So to just pause this, go look at that. 3-6 last year, they beat the Czechs, the English, and the Dutch for their three wins. That's why I have them above the Czechs this year because of that. They were 73.8% shooting last year, which was ninth in the field. That's obviously not going to get you far in this field. They went 2-4 at the pre-qualification for the last chance qualification of the Olympics event. So they're not going to that event in Kelowna. Most recently, Swiss Cup, they went 1-3. Scott, you just said that you would probably have Czechia ahead of them. I think I probably would too, but just based on the records last year, I went with Austria in this slot.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely have them ahead. Austria, so in the KenPom rankings, Magnus Ramsfell, 19, who we just talked about. Lukas Klima at 38, and Matthias Genner is 169.
He's lower than us, or are we still below?
That's, you know what? I'll just check right now. Yeah, like you're 120 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so 10-16 on the year. They apparently did beat a top 10 team. Hold on. I have to find out who this is. But yeah, just I don't know. I don't have much more to say. I can't find that picture though. Post it on Instagram.
Okay, it's the world. If you just go to the World Curling Federation, look at the teams for this event. It's his photo. There. Yeah,
they did beat Nicholas Adin in the Oslo Cup in August. Well, it might have been in September. It started in August. So there you go. But otherwise, yeah, not a very successful season.
Yeah, Jonathan, what's your take on the Austrians?
All right, I am going to give the Euros, there's really two battles going on. There's like the stuff that all you guys care about, who's going to win it. Yeah. There was also the battle for like eighth.
Yeah.
And that was a bloodbath also. It was us, Czechia, Austria, and who else? Oh, the Dutchies, our friends, the Dutch.
Wouter.
And we, I think probably like we basically went in, we were like, we need three wins. We know we need to beat. We need to beat the Austrians because they came up with us, probably the Dutch, and then we just got to grab one. Either we get lucky against them. That was our plan. I'm pretty sure it was their plan too. Mm-hmm. We did not execute that plan. They executed it perfectly. perfectly when the chips were down. So I'll give them like credit for that, 100%. I think they've kind of had a bit of a letdown since qualifying for Worlds. I think their goal was to try to get, I mean, they're pretty explicit. They need to get to Worlds. They're trying to get the Olympic qualification event. It's like all of these federations, they get Olympic funding out of it. So it was a pretty big pressure situation. I don't know what happens now. They haven't qualified, but you know, certainly capable of it when the chips are down, but I wouldn't, I think they might also be in the exact same spot this year, tight battle just to stay up.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Let's go to Czechia then, and Lukasz Klima and his team, Marek Cernowski, Martin Jurek, and Lukasz Klipa. Last year, 2-7 in this event, which was just enough to keep them in the A side, finishing in eighth place. As you say, the battle for eighth last year, scored in as many ends as they gave up points, 38 each side, but were minus 10 in the point differential. So different from what the Swiss had done and the Germans had done. They were giving up more points when other teams were scoring than when they scored. So sort of the inverse of what was going on elsewhere. This season, they did come over to Canada for a bit, made the quarterfinal of the KW Fall Classic. They were in the Tier 2 Slam, they in the Stucells Toronto as well. They were 3-3 in the Prague Classic in their most recent event. I like these guys. Like, I've had the chance to talk to Lukasz Klima a couple times at World Championships. He seems like a very nice guy. But, I mean, I don't ultimately know what the goal is other than just get ready for February.
Yeah, I think that's their goal. They're going to go to the Olympics. They've punched their ticket. And that's pretty big for that federation too. So that shouldn't be, like, just getting to the Olympics is a big accomplishment these days. So, yeah, I think, I mean, they'll want to get back to the world. So I think they'll want to grab that top eight for sure. I guess you could, if you have like another one of those bloodbath weeks and they kind of run hot and cold. And if they're hot, I could definitely see them in like some weird tiebreaker situation sneaking in. But I could also, if they run cold, see them fall to ninth kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah. When looking at their scores throughout the year, it looks like they've won a lot of games big, but the games they've lost have been kind of closer. So that's something I would look for, that, you know, how can they play in close games? And it's like pretty easy to get like a up 6 ends and then, or 6 points, and then just sort of run through the rest of the game as needed. But like, let's see how they play when it's tight, come down to the last couple of ends.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the two teams that came up from the B side last year. Start with Denmark. Jonathan Valance, the champions of the B-side last year, went 6-1 in the round robin alongside Jacob Schmidt, who is the skip, throws third, Alexander Kist and Casper Yurlander Borge. They beat Belgium, Spain, and Denmark through the playoffs in the B-side to win the event. They went 4-4 in that pre-qualification event for the last chance Olympic qualifier. They're playing in the Danish Open this week. Strikes me, Jonathan, that this is an experience play for these guys and just continue to gain experience. But
yeah, I think they're still juniors. They're very, like, the last time I saw them, they were about 4 feet tall playing Joe. So they're definitely 4 or 5 years younger than Joe. So I think they're still, if they're not still juniors, they're just out of juniors. They're really good. definitely that junior B, or up in the junior A. So like, yeah, I think they're probably more one for the future, but they're already pretty good now. So I wouldn't be like, oh, they're just not happy to be here kind of team.
Another one. If I put the over under at 2.5 wins, what would you take?
That sounds about right. I mean, I don't know. How are they going to respond to playing Nicodine? Because that is a head trip, speaking from experience. Right? It's I'm a bit older than them. So, you know, I guess you don't know until you do it kind of thing, right? But there's that factor at play too. But I think they need that experience. And once they get it, I think they'll be a perennial European team for the next decade.
Yeah, they need that. Do you need that? Is it Jimmy Valvano who was asked, like, do you think you have a chance to beat this team? And he's like, well, you have a better chance than anybody else in the country because we're the only ones playing them. So, like, you need that attitude.
Yeah,
like,
you need that attitude. And that can take a bit of time to get comfortable in that environment, right?
Yeah.
All right, final team on the men's side. It is Poland, the other team that came up from the B side. Konrad Stich, Krzysztof Domen, Marcin Semenski, and Bartosz.
Yeah.
What is it?
Marcin would be the pronunciation.
Okay, Marcin Semenski and Bartosz Lobaza. Yeah. They went 5-2. They were in the same pool as Denmark last year on the B side. So both the teams that were promoted come out of the same pool. They beat Turkey and Ireland to get their spot. They won the Prague Classic last week, and Lukasz Klima was in that field. So that's kind of maybe a nice little mental thing going into that game against Klima, which could be an important one when thinking about world qualification. I don't know too much about these guys. Jonathan, what do you know about them?
They're good. I think Pimpini won the Prague Classic. Unless my memory is going.
Okay. Well, again, we talked before we recorded. Curling zone isn't the greatest.
They did beat Klima to knock Klima out, and they qualified off that. I remember that. That was Saturday they did that. Okay. Pimpini, I'm like pretty sure, beat Turkey in the final.
Okay.
But they're a good team. I think like they're kind of at our level, top of the B, bottom of the A. So I think for them, it's their goals probably eighth. And that'll probably be tough, but they're in with a shout. So
yeah, they did win the bronze medal.
The bronze. Right. Yes. So, yeah. I just saw a win in the last game and just, I guess, assumed that they must have won the whole event.
Yeah, they did beat Klima though in that event. And, Pimpini was the victor, as Jonathan said, over the Turks.
Yeah.
All right. So those are the 10 teams. On the A side, again, Jonathan isn't going to make picks because he's involved in the event overall. So, Scott, I will leave that to the end to make our picks. Let's go to the B side here this year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So we got 15 teams, if I'm counting right here. 8 teams 16. In Group A. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Why is it spaced so different? I hate this website.
Did someone pull out or?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. No, they just have different spacing. Okay. So the lines. So in the space that they're using for 8 lines on the Group A, like it's smaller in Group B. Like it's taking up one line less with the same number of teams. Okay. So 2 pools of 8 here on the B side. Let's start with pool number A. It's Belgium, Finland, Hungary, Ireland, Israel, the Netherlands, Slovakia, and Spain. Jonathan, this is not the pool that you are going to have your closest eye on. Obviously, you guys are in pool B. But what do you like about these teams? Like, who do you have your eye on in Group A?
Who do I have my eye on? Probably Belgium. I think they've been doing pretty well lately. Finland's always a contender. Netherlands is a bit strange because they're not sending Wouter's team. They're sending Siemens Spitz, which is like the B team from the program.
Right.
Not as strong a team. The Wouter's team is concentrating on the Olympic qualification event and didn't want to do 2 big events back to back. The Irish are always tricky. And then Spain, I think, like that's actually, they're all like fairly close. Like I'd probably say Belgium, Finland, Ireland, Spain are all kind of favored for the top of the table in my mind.
Yeah, yeah, Sergio Vez has had some pretty good results at this. Yeah.
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 And then over Group B, it is England, you guys, Estonia, France, Latvia, Slovenia, Turkey, Ukraine, and Wales. Now, if I was just looking at sort of who's in this field, I would say Group A is a little stronger than Group B. But Jonathan, you're the ones who are have to navigate now Group B. I don't want to jinx you on that, but
I don't want to give any bulletin board material to Wales. So.
No, but like you got Turkey and Karagash. They're really good. You guys have been in the A. The other teams, like the Ukrainians, are a really cool story. The other guys are like, I don't know. That's sort of my take on it.
What? Well, what about France, right? Getting more money into the program, getting ready for 2030 hosting, knowing that they've got the Olympic bid sewn up. We could see the French team, you know.
I don't see an easy game in that pool. Let's put it that way. Like France, you know, we beat them, but it was an easy game, right? So
Yeah.
I think they always come to battle. Turkey is tough. We've beaten Estonia, but we went to an extra end against them. So I just kind of look at it. And I'm like I wouldn't say it's a cakewalk kind of draw,
right?
But, you know, like I think we're, you know, I think we're in with a shout.
Sure. Yeah, and that's pretty cool to you know have England and Wales play against each other. Always fun.
We play them all the time. So
less fun for you.
Less fun. We're like first. It's our first game. Also, we're like, oh, we should have just played in Dumfries. Why fly over to Finland?
Well, this one there's more on the line than in this version of the battle.
It's always spicy in a Euro. So yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So there you go. Those are the teams in the B side. Let's shift over to the women's field. And kind of interesting here on the women's side is that we don't have a defending champion in the field this year, as the Swiss Federation is sending the national champions, which is Corey Hurleman. And as a result, the defending champion, Savannah Tirinzoni, is not in the field. So if I were doing my power rankings, I will start with the silver medalist from last year. It is Sweden and Anna Hasselberg. Nockenhauer and McManus were the best ranked in their positions last year. Anna Hasselberg herself was the third ranked skip. So really solid performances all up and down this lineup, which is what you'd expect from them this season. Quarterfinals at the Masters, semifinals at the Tour Challenge, quarterfinal at the Tahoe Slam. They're always really good. And I think, Scott, without Savannah Tirinzoni in the field, I do think they're the clear favorite.
Yeah, they're the clear favorites, no doubt about it. Sean, 14-7 I've got on the year here, third ranked behind just Rachel Holman and the aforementioned Savannah Tirinzoni. So, and then looking at the rest of the field, yeah, there's some good teams, but without Switzerland there, I think they're the prohibitive favorite.
Jonathan, do you agree that they're the favorite going in?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to. Yeah, I'd say so. I don't really see who else. Like, yeah, I don't get why Schwaller wasn't sent if it's not Tirinzoni. But is it just because they won?
Yeah, they won. Okay. Yeah.
So it's an interesting team. It's good that they still have an open qualification system. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the gap's pretty significant, I'd say.
Yeah. All right, so let's. I'm putting the Swiss second here, just because it's Swiss women's curling, and
don't count them out.
Never count out whoever is representing Switzerland. It's Corey Hurleman, who is going this year, and her team. They made the quarterfinal at the Tier 2 Slam, semifinal at the Sundberg Open, and the quarterfinal at the event in Grenville. It's their most recent event from October 30th to November the 2nd. Jonathan, do you think this team, because of the success of Swiss women's curling, is there added pressure for them?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, I guess there is, in the sense that, like, if you don't finish top eight, a lot of bad things could happen, which actually looking at the field's semi-possible. So, yeah, this is a strange field, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Looking at across the board, I'm putting my money on Madalena DuPont again. this is the kind of field where she could do some damage for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I guess so. I mean, I just haven't seen this team play, so it's hard for me to handicap them, right? I mean, I guess if they won a Swiss championship, they're a certain kind of strength, but they don't have the experience and the results you read out. They're fine, but they're not. They're not kind of scary for heading into a Euros results either.
Yeah. Yeah. And they haven't really beaten anybody good in the past year, right? Or this season, rather. So, yeah, maybe it'll be a bit of sharpening their teeth for this event. It'll be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I want to say sharp. They're sharpening something. Anyway.
All right, let's go on to the Italians and okay. Stefania Constantini. They went 6-3 last year in the playoffs, lost to the Swiss and then lost to the Scottish in the bronze medal game. They actually went 0-2 against Scotland last year. They tied with Turkey for the most points given up for teams that lost fewer than 8 games with 58 points given up. That's a lot of points to give up in 11 games. So that's a bit of a concern for them. They did score 71 points. So I like this style of play. This is the Suzanne Burt of it all, of just go for it and score lots of points. They've had a not great season so far this year. From my counting, 21-16 on the year. They lost the final of the event in Basel and missed the playoffs at the Master, quarterfinal at the Tour Challenge. So not really the season I'm sure they would want going into as we get closer and closer to February. I don't know how important it is for them to make a statement in this one, but you know, some momentum I think would be well suited for them.
I mean, I think they've made the playoffs definitely 2 of the last 3 years, right? If not all 3 of the Euros. So they're kind of there. I think in the playoffs, they've posted not super strong results, if I'm going by memory. So yeah. I think, it's hard to say. Like, they're good, but they just haven't really punched through yet.
Like we've seen Stefania do it at the mixed doubles, right?
Yeah.
To punch through there at the last Olympics, and you keep waiting for her women's team to do something similar, but just aren't quite there, like you said. So I think they'll definitely make the playoffs in this field.
They should. I think they should.
Yeah, but
probably
then
they should. The team. I think the team's not as strong shooting wise as some of the other teams. It got kind of lower down the lineup.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think Constantini does struggle a bit in fours with strategy. Just from times I've watched, I think, and that probably comes with experience at the high level. Kind of like when the tricky situations pop up, I think she seems to take a lot of time when I've watched her.
Yeah.
Versus say. You know, a Tirinzoni or a Pats, they're pretty decisive. So and that probably just comes from like playing a lot of big games and
and the confidence too. Like those skips have the confidence that they're going to make what they call. And so maybe she just needs that experience to develop that confidence. Yeah.
She's still pretty young also. So, you know.
I mean, she does have an Olympic gold medal in her back pocket. If she does nothing for the rest of her career, she's had a good career. Like,
exactly.
She's fine. Yeah. All right, let's go to the Scottish side. They won the bronze medal last year. Rebecca Morrison, Jennifer Dodd, Sophie Sinclair, and Sophie Jackson. 6-3 in the round. Robin won a bronze medal. They did lose, though, to Turkey in the round. Robin, statistically, last year, Rebecca Morrison was the highest ranked fourth stone thrower at 83.4%. Sophie Jackson was first for the first throwers, and Sophie Sinclair was the second, but Jennifer Dodds was not in the top 5 of the rankings. So that was their weak point relative to the rest of the field, was Jennifer Dodds last year, which is kind of surprising when you look at the lineup. If I were to pick one of the 4 of them who would be lower ranked, I don't think I would have picked Jennifer Dodds. So far this season, they lost the final of the Tier 2 Slam, went 1-3 in the Tahoe Slam last year. Jonathan, you are on the ground in Scotland, so I will give you the first word here on Team Jackson.
It's a strange lineup, but it works. That's my I think they've struck on this thing where so. Like Jen Dodds is like a power sweeper in the women's game, and she's there for the brushing. Sophie Jackson's a good game caller, so she's a skip and she's got good touch. They put her at lead in skipping. Rebecca does throw a good stone and is good under pressure. So she says she likes not having to call the game, so she finds it easier just to to throw. So it is like a weird lineup, but it's been mm-hmm. working. So who am I to question it? Yeah.
So, I'm sure the Facebook group questions it though.
Which Facebook group?
The Scottish curling
banter.
Never, Sean. Never.
Yeah. There's never any banter there.
I do like this team. I think they've been slowly improving, getting sort of the rhythm as a team, and it makes sense. It's not like what people would assume, you know, the skip throwing the first rock or anything, but it works for them, and I think they're having a fine season, not outstanding or anything, but beating who they should be beating. And having good games against those teams in the top 25. So, yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't make the playoffs. Wait a minute. It's four teams playoffs.
Correct. So
they should be fighting for that last playoff spot. Yeah.
Yeah, I think them and the next two teams will be interesting for playoff contention. So let's move on to the next one, which is Denmark. It is Madelena DuPont, 5-4 last year, which was good for the middle of the pack. They did have the most blanks in the event last year on the women's side with 14. They did beat the teams that you would have expected them to beat and lost to the teams that you would have expected them to lose to last year. So far this year, they lost the final of the Shorty Jenkins. They lost the semifinal of the Tier 2 Slam. But as of 2 hours ago when I compiled all this, they are on a 17-game winning streak. They went undefeated through the Sundberg Open, undefeated through the Tallinn Challenger, and were undefeated in the Danish Open, which is going on as we record this. So it's possible that they have lost since. I looked that up a couple hours ago. But as of 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday, November the 15th, they were on a 17-game winning streak. Scott, this is your account, the Madelena DuPont Haters Club. So I don't know. I like teams that come in on a hot stretch. Now, those aren't necessarily the best fields in the world. They're not terrible fields either, but it's not the caliber of the Euros. But better to win than to lose.
Heck yeah, better to win than to lose. And 32-9 is the record I've got for them on the year. So yeah, on a bit of a heater, 500 against teams in the top 25, but you know, they're beating the teams they should beat. And you know, a big winning streak makes you confident. Yeah. And confidence is very important when it comes to curling.
Yeah. Jonathan, how do you feel about this team?
I like them. I don't know why Scott hates them. I think Maddie's a clutch draw player, which that's what you want to skip, and they can grind it out, and they've done it lots of times. So, yeah, they're not a slam team, but in their universe that they normally play in, they're strong and they're pretty comfortable in the Euros. So,
yeah,
I would put them in as like I would pencil them in for a playoff spot for sure, and then who knows what happens.
Okay. So. Yeah. Interesting. Who do you think is out then of those top four that we've gone through?
Four.
I had Switzerland or Sweden, Switzerland, Italy, and Scotland ahead of them in my little power rankings.
I would probably say Denmark upsets the Swiss. Yeah.
Okay.
If Alina Patz is there, it's a different story, but
sure.
Yeah.
I think I'd kind of give them a bit of an edge just off experience.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah. All right, talking experience, let's go to Norway. Kristin Skaslien throwing the four stones. Marianne Rørvik is the skip. They went 4-5 last year, which was good for seventh place. They did win the bronze of the Euros in 2023 and, of course, had that great run at the World Championship a couple of years ago. Semifinal in the event in Basel. And as we speak, or at least as of 1 p.m. Eastern time on November the 15th, they were also undefeated at the Danish Open. So either Madelena DuPont or Kristin Skaslien will lose a game before the Euros because they can't both go undefeated through the Danish Open. But again, better to be winning than losing. I like this team. I've always kind of liked this team. And as we've seen here and there, they can have a pretty good stretch and upset people and get into finals. So it wouldn't shock me if they make the playoffs here, but either of you guys would be surprised?
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think they're as strong as the other teams we've talked about already, but they're in the conversation. Sort of everybody, I think, is sort of in that same sphere that we've talked about so far, except Hasselberg at one tier higher.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think this is a pretty flat field apart from Hasselberg. So,
yeah,
I could definitely see them qualifying, but I don't rank them as highly as the others we've talked about so far. So,
yeah.
All right, let's go down to the B division champions from last year, and it is Chechia. It is Anna Kubiskova. They went 8-1 to win the B side last year. Last time for Kubiskova at the Euro A's was back in 2023, went 2-7 and got relegated, which is why they were in the B side last year. Semifinalist in the event in Prague, Sundberg, and Tallinn. So some pretty good results there with teams in this field. Obviously didn't win any of those events, but it's kind of nice to see Anna Kubiskova back in the A side. Maybe not a threat to win, but not a bad team either, right? Like, Jonathan, am I right? They're always going to give you a pretty decent game.
Yeah, no, they're a good team. I think they're still in the Olympic qualification event just after. So
I think you're right. Oh no, they didn't represent. Chechia is going, but they weren't at the pre-qualification events.
Oh, so it's a different team going through that process. Interesting.
Yeah, so let me just pull it up here because I was kind of surprised. So the Czechs, Chechia was represented in that event by Hanna Sinakova.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they did qualify for the event in Kelowna. I would assume it's that team that would go and not Kubiskova.
Yeah, I guess so. So I don't know. It's a bit like the Dutch. Maybe they're splitting the teams up. They don't want to run two big events back to back, especially with so much on it. But I mean, Kubiskova's been there, done that. I think like they could make the playoffs. They could get relegated, basically.
Yeah.
Like they're in that mid tier. Yeah.
I agree.
All right. Good analysis, Scott.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to Turquia. They went 5-4 last year, good for sixth place. Dilşat Yıldız was the fifth-ranked skip or fourth stone thrower, 74.6%. None of the other players were close to that ranking. This year, they won the event in Prague. They also lost the final of the event in Sundberg, currently 1-2 at the Danish Open. But as we've talked about before, Scott, with this team, like Dilşat can make some stuff. You see it when they're on TV, when you get to see those shots, but the rest of the team just isn't at her level yet is certainly my take on it. But what do you think?
Yeah, definitely not. That's where they're going to need to build the depth on the bench and just sort of like have the rest of the team play up to Dilşat for this team to, you know, be a consistent A pool team. I guess maybe not going forward after this, everybody's in the A pool, but they should be there. And they're good enough based just on her skills alone to take them pretty far.
Yeah. Jonathan, you've probably seen them in person, certainly more than either of us have. What's your take on them?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think Dilşat's really good shooter. Probably the stats underplay it a bit. Probably because she's got to play a lot of bailout shots.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. The depth of the team's just not there. And, you know, a good shooting skip can drag you a long way, but eventually if you're playing bailout after bailout shot, it's gonna catch up with you, I think.
Yeah.
All right, two teams left. So let's go to the other team coming up from the B side. It is Germany. They went 8-1 to get into the A side, lost to Chechia in the final last year. It is Kim Suter, along with Sarah Mezenzahl, Zoe Antes, and Joy Suter. They beat Hungary in the qualification event. So they are going to be going to Kelowna in a couple weeks. So far on the season, in addition to that event, they won the event in Prague, semifinal in Tallinn. I'll just say, I think it's good to see Germany back in this. I, you know, They have a really good curling tradition. Obviously there was the change over there in the women's program, and you know, that happens. People decide to not curl competitively anymore, but I just think it's nice to see him back in this event.
Yeah. Yeah. I like seeing Germany up in the main draw. And yeah, good for them to come back. This team's been playing pretty well this year. 21-10 is the record I'm seeing. Yeah, sort of a team that probably isn't going to win this, but could give everybody a good game.
Yeah, Jonathan, what's your take on Germany back in the women's field?
I've never seen this. I've seen some of the individuals players play in juniors. I've never seen this lineup play in anything. So I don't have any more insight beyond the record you read off. So,
all right, well, this will be fun to see how they do this week. And then the final team in the field is Lithuania. They went 1-8 last year, tied with Estonia and Hungary. And they got through and made the world championship on the draw shot challenge. Theirs was 63.06 centimeters, and Estonia and Hungary's were both in the 66 range. So by three centimeters, they made it into the world championship. They beat Hungary last year. That was their only win. They went 2-4 in the pre-qualification Olympic event, so they will not be going to Kelowna. But for Virginia and the team, good on them to have stuck around. They got the world championship experience last year. I don't expect them to be as fortunate this year, but it's maybe not as strong of a field. So maybe they can actually get a couple wins. I don't know. But Jonathan, what do you think?
I mean, I like the story. They battled up from the B with us and squeaked into the eighth spot and got to the worlds. I agree. I don't think they're at the level of the other nine teams in the field, if I'm being blunt, but their skip was super steady and made a lot of, she made like the big shots she had to kind of squeak them in. And that's kind of part of the fun of the relegation battle too. So, you know, two wins gets you in. So you don't have to have a great week. You just got to make the right shots at the right time. So I guess I could see that happening again, but I'd be surprised if they weren't relegated.
Yeah, Sean, I think what they taught us last year is the importance of those draw shot challenge stones.
Yeah, they finished eighth in the draw shot challenge.
Yeah. So
yeah,
even if you're finishing low,
it's all you need.
That, huh?
That's all you need. I mean, you just got to beat the people. It's like that thing where, like, you don't have to be the fastest antelope. You just have to be not the slowest antelope, and then the lion won't eat you.
Yeah.
I like the draw shot. I think that's a pressure thing. I like it. I know it's unpopular, but I wish I had shown it on TV, because actually it's a bit scary having to sit in the hack and throw a draw dead quiet in a rink.
Yeah.
But everyone watching, and you got to get to the pin, right? So it's a mental toughness test for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so those are the 10 teams in the A side. Fewer teams on the B side than in the men's. We got 10 teams on the B side this year, so no pool play. But we have Austria, England, Estonia, Finland, Hungary, Latvia, the Netherlands, Poland, Slovakia, and Slovenia. Jonathan, how do you size up the women's B side?
Oh, God. okay. I'll tell you the teams I really like. So I'm obviously partial to Team England, but also I'll bracket that, so I'm not saying anything one way or other, but I think they've got a good lineup this year. I think I really like Evelina Barone. I'm not sure if you remember her. She got Latvia to a World Juniors a few years back. I think she's a really strong skip. Mm-hmm. I really like Hungary. I think they bounce back and forth, but they kind of ground it out, so I'd be kind of curious to see them. And then I think that the Netherlands have an emerging women's team with Lisenka Bomas at skip. She's played in a few world mixed doubles. So like, she's kind of an up and comer on the Dutch side and the women's side. So that'll be a team to watch also.
Scott, who do you have your eye on out of those teams?
Yeah, that was basically the three that I was looking at. I clicked through something. Latvia would probably be my pick to win, to get up. And then yeah, between England and Hungary were sort of my next two.
Okay. Well, then there you have it. Just that easy.
Yeah.
Just that easy. I mean, yeah, these are teams that I don't really know all that much other than, you know, following Curling Zone or the week-to-week happenings happening over in Europe. But, yeah, so my uninformed opinion based on stats.
What do the stats say? I haven't even looked at the rankings. Would that, would there be the top three rated teams on KenPom or?
Let's look. Women's team. Latvia is 100.
Uh-huh.
Hungary are 149. Mm-hmm. And the other one was England.
England and the Netherlands. Yeah.
Yeah, let's look here. England 112 and Netherlands 140.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's Estonia? And I assume the team will be under Lisa Turman.
Yeah, 69.
Yeah, so that's another one probably to watch. I mean, they've been in the A's before. They've been at Worlds before. So that's a one potentially to watch as well.
Yeah, good call, Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so there you have it. Those are the... 26 plus 20, 46 teams that'll be playing in the European Championships coming up starting next Saturday, the 22nd of November. Jonathan, not that curling revolves around what happens in Canada by any means, but was there any comment or is there any note? Because when the trials were in Ottawa, there were a bunch of European players in the stands watching it. We watched one of the finals. Who are we? Were we ahead of Nicodine, Scott? Nicodine was a row behind us in the upper deck at the Canadian Tire Center. But was there any comment of like, this is happening at the same time? Like, obviously no one would be playing in both. No one's eligible to play in both. But was there any, it's someone I think screwed up here that these things are happening. I don't know who it is, but I think someone screwed up.
Isn't it by design? I kind of figured that they just didn't want, they wanted like the international events or whatever you want to call the trials. Like you wanted that to sync with the Euros.
Sure.
So then all the top teams could go play in other events and not clash, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine that was probably the rationale behind it.
Yeah.
But it diverts our attention as people who like watching good curling.
Do Canadians like to watch the Euros or that's my vibe is they don't care, but maybe I've been gone for so long that maybe it's a big thing now, or I don't know.
I wouldn't say it's a big thing,
but like if you're at the Ottawa Curling Club on a Wednesday during the Euros, are people like, oh yeah, Bruce is whatever 7-1 or something, right?
No. I think we talk about it.
We do like our team will.
Okay. So the hardcores. Yeah. But
yeah.
The normies. No, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, here.
Sorry, maybe here, a club like ours is a little different just because because it's home and it's home club. So I think more people pay attention to tour stuff than like an average club would be my guess. But even at that, it's not top of mind.
Yeah. I mean, here, I think at the rink, people care about the trials also. They want to know. Hmm. Yeah. In Scotland, I think they want to see Bruce win. And they want like interesting teams to come out of the trials for the Olympics to lose to Bruce. Yeah. That's basically what they want, right? So I guess it's clearly a very partisan crowd at the rink, but I'm sure in Canada it's the same thing. But
nice.
Yeah, we like it. So I should note too, just real quick, that the American trials are going on as we're speaking here, and Tabitha Peterson won the first game of the finals. It's best of three. Last night, she's up 3-2 as we're speaking here. So I would, and she hasn't lost yet. I would expect her to make it through, but who knows, things happen. And on the men's side, John Schuster and Danny Casper playing the best of three there. The second game is tonight. Danny Casper won the first game 7-6. So he is currently in a good position. He's one win away from the Olympics, but as we've learned over the years, never count out John Schuster when it comes to Olympic things.
No.
You know, you got to put...
Didn't Schuster go down the first game, the last two trials also?
That sounds right to me. Yeah. Yeah. So, you really have to put the figurative spike through his heart before he's going to give up. It's always fun to see. So I think that's what we got for you. We didn't make picks. Scott, do you want to make picks here for the Euros?
Yeah, I do. Are you writing them down?
Yeah, I'll write them down here.
Great.
All right. So let's go A side. What? Podium, A side.
Podium and winner.
Okay.
So I'm going to take Bruce Mowat to win. Schwaller and Retournaz.
Okay. And Italy. And who gets relegated?
Austria.
And who else? Two get relegated, Scott.
Oh, two will get relegated?
Yeah.
Then let's go with Poland.
Poland. Okay. And then on the B side for the men, two teams.
I don't have them pulled up, so why don't you give me your A side winners?
All right. It's kind of impossible to go against Bruce Mowat to win, I think. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Bruce Mowat. I'm going to go Germany to make the podium just to mix it up a bit and see if they can sustain their run. And then I will go also with Sweden to get there. Nicholas Edin. In terms of the relegation, I'll go with Denmark and Poland.
And so for the Bs, what are we looking for? Just a winner?
Two promotions.
All right. Well, Jonathan's sitting right here. So let's go with England and let's take Spain as well.
All right. So you're going with England and Spain to get promoted. I like that Spanish team as well. I like you guys too, Jonathan. I should note that. But to be different from Scott, give me Finland and I'll go Belgium. You talked me into Belgium, Jonathan. I'll go with them. So there we go. Go with them. On the women's side, Scott, who you got?
I think I have to take Madalena DuPont to win. and give me Constantini and Hasselberg.
Okay. And Sweden. And your relegation teams?
I'm going to pick Germany and Czechia.
Czechia. Okay. And your promotions from the B side?
My promotions from the B side are, we just talked about. So Latvia.
Okay.
Definitely Latvia. And then, yeah, I think Estonia after having talked about them.
All right. So for me, I'm going to go with Anna Hasselberg and Sweden to win. Give me Scotland in there as well. And who else do I like out of this field? Give me Norway and Kristin Skaslien to get through the relegation side. I think Lithuania will be relegated down. And I'll take Turkey as well to go down. Women's side on the B, I will go with... I'm going to go with Hungary and Estonia will be there for me. So those are our picks this year. Jonathan, again, you don't have to pick, but if you were to give each of us a letter grade for our picks. Do you like one of our
four? Reasonable? I don't know. Okay. Letter grade? I don't know. Like, none of them sounded crazy to me. I was surprised Scott went with Madalena DuPont. That probably curses her now. So
that's right. That's why I did it.
Reverse jinx. Yeah,
reverse jinx. Jeez. Reverse jinx, yeah. Cruel.
So there you go. That's going to be it for us on our Euros preview. Thanks for joining us, everybody. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Like, rate, comment, all that good stuff. Head on over to GameOfStonesPod.com. Past episodes are there, plus a link to the merch. We're on the socials at Game of Stones Pod, Game of Stones Podcast on Facebook, and Game of Stones Podcast at gmail.com. If you want to let us know what you want to hear on the show. Jonathan, what's the latest for you and Ryan? It's been hit and miss. In terms of public, I'm always very excited when an episode pops up in the feed.
Ryan would rather spend time with his young kids than me, and you know, he'll probably regret that on his deathbed. Like, who doesn't on their last breath wish they? Oh, I wish I had spent so much time with my kids.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of slows down the production, but we try. I don't know. I'll ping him back a bit. I think we had something almost lined up. They said, wait till after Euros. So maybe we'll try to do one between Euros and Christmas.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys did, if memory serves, 4 years ago, you did something that was like, for people who are new to curling, like in advance of the Olympics, assuming people are going to be searching and stuff. You guys did like a curling 101, basically. I remember that. That was good.
We should just re-feed that up, yeah. I think. Because actually it's kind of evergreen content, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've reposted things before.
Yeah. Once or twice. Yeah. Men with Brooms.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of pandemic peak.
We all had time.
Had time. That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You cut out that commute time. There you go. Right there.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on the Rocks Across the Pond feed. Subscribe to them if you have not yet, and show them some love. We always love the opportunity to do this. I will say that we did lose, Scott and I. We lost the bet last year with Ryan. We never settled the bet in terms of drinking a bad beer. Geez. But what I'm going to do, I pledge this to the two of you. Once we're finished here, I'm going to go upstairs. And I have one of the hoppiest beers that I could find that I enjoy. But as a tribute to our pal Ryan, who hates those beers, I am going to drink a beer that he thinks is bad. And that's how I will settle the bet. And Scott, I know you have hoppy beers in your house too.
Yes.
So that's how we will settle the bet.
We'll post it on our Instagram, which beers we pick.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I think we've also established there is no beer that Ryan considers bad.
I know. So. It's hard to make this bet with him because.
Yeah. But there's ones he likes less, I guess I should put it that way.
Yeah. I think he hates hoppy beers. So just like a triple hopinator or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Go with the double IPA, super hoppy. Yeah. And that'll count as settling the bet. So we'll do that after this one. Yeah. We'll post it up on Instagram, the settling of the bet. And we'll see if we can do, hopefully at some point, maybe around the Olympics, we could do another stream because those are always fun. If the four of us are available. So keep an eye out for all that good stuff. And we'll be watching. Good luck at the Euros, Jonathan. We're rooting for you as always.
Thanks. Yeah.
And we'll be back with you later this week to do our trials preview, Canadian Olympic Curling Trials preview. Look for that, I think, on Tuesday, hopefully. So that'll be coming at you real soon. But until we talk to you then, keep those brooms on the ice and don't dump that intern.
Make the final.